Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Synchronicity. Now, I'm not sure that you will find such a thing in any of our 5-minute mysteries, but there's always hope. Now, here is our story.
At the toll gate to the great new cross-country speedway, a sporty red convertible pauses.
How much, bud?
$1.50 to the next gate. Hey, what's the trouble with your friend there in the back seat, all bandaged up that way?
Accident.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, good luck. Hey, take it easy. About 2 miles ahead. Repairs.
Okay, I'll watch it.
The convertible travels fast. 2 miles farther on, they round a slight curve. The temporary fences around the road repair work loom close ahead. There is a sudden shout from a man at the side of the highway.
Hey, look out!
Joe, did you see that? One of them guys fell out of the back seat. Let's get over there, quick!
So, Mr. Bryant, you say you weren't aware of the construction signs.
Not until I was right on top of them, Sheriff. Ask Al here. He was in the back seat with Johnny. Did we see him, Al?
Didn't the toll gate keeper warn you about that spot?
Well, the signs are moved for just a couple of minutes, Sheriff. Brad and I was out there to warn the cars to slow down.
Now, this guy came along so fast, though, we didn't get a chance.
You realize, of course, Mr. Bryant, that this is a very serious matter. The third person in your car, John Albertson, was killed instantly when he fell from the back seat. The toll gatekeeper reports that he was already the victim of an accident, was bound up in bandages.
I know, Sheriff. I shouldn't have driven so fast. I don't know what to say.
Well, let's hear your story, Joe.
Yeah, it was this way, Sheriff. Brad and I were standing alongside the highway, like I said, and all of a sudden this red convertible comes racing along, doing, oh, at least 85 around the curve.
I see. Go on.
Well, the two guys in the back seat, this big man Al here and the other guy, they were sitting there with their heads down. When the brakes went on, they raised up. John, the bandaged one, fell out the back. He must have lost his grip, I guess. He just flew right out the back when the car stopped.
He flew out the back, eh?
Hey, Sheriff, can we go now? I'll come back later if you want, but I feel pretty bad about this. I think I could use some rest.
Rest? Sure, Mr. Bryant, you'll get plenty of rest. Right here in the county jail. I'm holding you for the murder of John Albertson.
What reason did the sheriff have for believing that John Albertson was murdered? In just a moment, we'll find out, but first...
Of all the dumb things to say, one also has to wonder why in the world they would be racing on a highway with a bandaged friend in the car in the first place. Seems like a bad idea from the get-go and probably a bit suspicious. Let's find out.
And now, back to our 5-minute mystery and the murder of John Albertson.
Murder? What are you talking about, Sheriff? There wasn't any murder.
It was murder, all right. And you and Al here collaborated on it. You see, Bryant, when a moving vehicle stops suddenly, the passengers in it are thrown forward, not backward. If Albertson lost his grip, he would have been thrown into the front seat, not back onto the highway. You're having him all bandaged up like that just made it easier for Al to throw him out. You see, Bryant, this time it was natural law that threw you into the hands of social law. Say, that's not a bad line.
Yes, that is a very bad line. One of the worst we've ever had, and it lacks any kind of synchronicity with the story. Social law is a unified concept of law which replaces the classical division of public law and private law. And don't get me started on natural law. Jeez. This 5-minute mystery was brought to you by the lack of synchronicity. Well, I have to say, welcome to the podcast. We have today what I like to call an asynchronous show for you, hence the title of Synchronicity.
Ron, just what is synchronicity?
Well, the dictionary has this to say: the simultaneous occurrence of events which appear significantly related but have no discernible causal connection. I believe that gives me a lot of latitude in putting this together. What we have is 4 listener stories which follow the rules of synchronic events. This is followed by a classic science fiction story with seemingly no connection to anything. We end the program with a non-synchronous event in history. Are you confused?
I am.
Well, don't be. Just sit back and enjoy Ron's amazing stories. As you know, I like to keep you updated on some of the numbers of the show. This is partially because of my status as a super nerd, and also you guys ask me all the time anyway. The Philippines continue to impress with your love of the podcast. We have moved up to 110th on the list of Apple Podcasts in the fictional category. In the last 90 days, we've had 438 downloads from Australia. G'day, mates. And in Russia, we've had 1 download in the same period. I'm guessing we may not be as well known by our Russian friends. Now, do you want to know the USA numbers? That would be 19,783. And for the record, we have a tie in the UK and Canada with 720. Thank you for all of your support. It literally means the world to me. During the last few weeks, we've been talking about Jason Dowd's challenge to us all. On the Horror Express number 19, we talked about David Larson's marionette. Jason conducted a full investigation of the little guy and had some interesting results at first, then forgot all about him. However, quite recently the doll came up missing, and Jason wants us to guess as to what may have happened to it. Next week, we will be piloting a new segment called The Paranormal with Jason. On this show, Jason and I will read your submissions and pick the most creative to receive a gift from Gladys Goodies for your doggy. At stake is 4 ounces of chicken treats and 2 ounces of doggy biscuits. So far, we have 4 submissions from you guys, and you have until Friday, July 3rd, to get your guesses in. So please send your ideas to ronsamazingstories@gmail.com or simply use the contact tab on the main page. All stories are welcome, no matter how strange they may be. My thanks to Jason and GladysGoodies.com for this contest. Now, let's get to the rest of the show with this message from Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? The Swimmer, the Diana Nyad story. This one is very different from anything that I have recommended thus far. Do you know who Diana is? At age 64, the legendary athlete inspired the world when she walked onto the shores of Key West after crossing the Mount Everest of the Earth's oceans. She became the first person in history to make the 111-mile swim from Cuba to Florida without assistance and without a shark cage. Here is an excerpt from the book.
Where we swimming from? Cuba. Where we swimming to? Florida.
Diana is 40 hours into her third attempt to become the first person to swim from Cuba to Florida.
It's noisy under here. People ask me if I meditate. They must be kidding. You go 40 hours. The sound of your breath magnified underwater, somewhere between the sloshing of a baby in the womb and a swooshing of a comet across space. 53 times a minute. 40 continuous hours. Yes, I do believe I'm meditating.
She was 28 when she first tried the crossing. Today, she's 62.
It's noisy for me, but up top, the team, on a night like this, no whisper of wind, they hear no sound for infinity in all directions.
No sound except for the steady breathing of our swimmer echoing out across the sea.
It's an understatement to say it's an extreme physical endeavor. The body has endured hundreds of hours of punishment and training by now. But it takes a disciplined mind as well. All these austere hours of sensory deprivation. I can't see very well. I'm trying to follow a little red flashing light on our expedition boat, Voyager. Our genius navigator, Bartlett, is on that boat, setting the course. We use red lights only because all others attract sharks.
Over here, Diana. Come on.
That's Bonnie, my head handler. No, it's not an actor. It's the real Bonnie. Bonnie's become the head of the expedition at this point. Now, Bonnie, I can see. For 40 hours now, she's never out of my sight. She even pees right over the side of Voyager.
That's the truth.
Bonnie is a soldier standing faithful sentry. She's a strong silhouette I look for breath after breath.
You are drifting too far from the boat.
Bonnie makes that point endlessly. The brain isn't wired to focus on something as concrete as a little red flashing light for days at a time. The brain goes elsewhere while the body continues to work on automatic pilot, like a metronome.
Diana, this way, left, left, towards the boat.
I guess I'm drifting way out to the right side of Voyager again. Bonnie, the shark team, the medical team, they can't do their jobs. They can't protect me, like when I'm over close to the boat.
Diana!
I don't see well, and I don't hear too much either. Bonnie has to use a loud police whistle to catch my attention, get me over closer to the boat.
Look, this way, towards the boat, left, left.
Okay, I guess we're back in the groove now. I'm sinking down into the interior of the mind. I'm going to spend the next several hours with my goal of getting to 200 versions of Blue Bayou. This metronomic stroke counts time as accurately as an atomic clock. When I get to 200 Blue Bayous, I will be at precisely 8 hours and 15 minutes. I'm not allowed to use headphones, but what I do have is the memory of the sweetest of all voices, Roy Orbison, wafting through my brain. Oh, to see my baby again, Spend some time with some of my friends. Maybe I'll be happy then on Blue Bayou.
The Swimmer was recorded live at the Minetta Lane Theater. Nyad shares the heartbreaking setbacks, brushes with death, and victories that kept her going, plunging the audience into the depths of her extraordinary journey. It was written by Nyad, directed by Emmy Award winner Jane Anderson, and features her longtime coach and friend, Bonnie Stoll. Nyad makes her New York stage debut in this powerful story of passion and resilience. Now, I do have to warn you that this audiobook contains some language and adult themes, but I think the powerful nature of the story would have been lost without those references. The Swimmer, the Diana Nyad story, truly is inspirational, and you can have her book today. Here is what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you can get The Swimmer today. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Stories of coincidences and synchronicity never fail to make us shake our heads in sheer astonishment and delight in how the universe sometimes functions. Are they cases of mere coincidence, the random appearance of seemingly remote odds? Or is there something deeper, more meaningful, and ultimately more mysterious taking place? This time I will read stories sent in by you that highlights this paranormal phenomenon. Our first story comes from author James Dupree, who lives in Mikado, Minnesota. He has titled it, My Manuscript. Hello, Ron. The story I'm about to tell is odd, but very true. I have no explanation for it, and have always decided that it was fate. I had just finished my first book and sent it to a publisher. A few weeks later, I was disturbed to find my manuscript in bad shape all over my front lawn. It was the same copy that I had sent to the publisher, but apparently it had been thrown disrespectfully over my front yard fence. I asked myself, did the publisher really dislike it that much? I decided to call them to find out why my work had been discarded so tactlessly. And second, how did they know where I lived? I use a P.O. box number. The publisher explained that this was not the case at all. In fact, she had high hopes for the manuscript. So what happened? While she was dining at a restaurant, thieves broke into her car and stole several things, including my manuscript. I guess they kept the valuables, but the thieves later just tossed the manuscript away over my front fence. I reprinted a copy and sent it again. The book became my bestseller to date, and I continue to work with this publisher today. You don't have to believe in the paranormal to accept this story, but it helps. James Dupree, Mikado, Minnesota. Well, James, first let me say that this story defines synchronicity. And you're right, it requires no belief at all. It just happened, and that's enough. I would like to know what the name of the book was and what it was about. Please tell us, and thank you for your story. Our next story was sent in by me. I had nothing to do with it, but I found it floating around the internet. Floating is a good word to use because I have titled it Dead Man Floating Home. In 1899, while touring Texas, Canadian actor Charles Coughlin fell and died while in the city of Galveston. His body was placed in a lead coffin, which was sealed and interred in a vault. A year later, a severe hurricane hit Galveston, causing much destruction. This included the cemetery where he was buried. His coffin was washed out of the vault and out of the cemetery by raging waters. It was then carried out to sea and never seen again. The coffin drifted for years on the ocean currents, out of the Gulf of Mexico, along the Florida coast, and into the Atlantic Ocean, where the Gulf Stream carried it north. Coughlin's body had drifted more than 5,600 miles until it was finally discovered in 1908 by fishermen on the shores of Prince Edward Island. Now, why is this significant? Well, that just happened to be Coughlin's home. His body was reburied in the churchyard of the parish where he was baptized. How about that for synchronicity? This next story comes from the pen of Barry Smith. Barry didn't disclose his current location. This story will make you wonder if the idea of a tulpa is a reality. Tulpa is a concept in mysticism and the paranormal of a being or object which is created through spiritual or mental powers. I have titled this story, The Pen or the Tulpa. Hello, Ron. I was attending a fancy dress ball at the invitation of a friend. Before the dance, we went to a restaurant for dinner. We had a lovely time at the event, and after the ball, I returned to my hotel. While I was changing out of my dinner jacket, I noticed that my gold pen was missing, and I was sure I had it during dinner. This pen is very special to me, and I was devastated. After a thorough search didn't turn up the pen, I went back to the restaurant and described it to the staff. It was a gold Schaefer pen inscribed with my name, Barry Smith. After talking a bit with the staff, I was quite pleased when one of them said that they had found it. Later that evening, I was packing my bags to return home the next morning. In the bottom of my carry-on bag was a gold Schaefer pen, another one inscribed with B. Smith. So where did the one in the restaurant come from, and to whom did it belong? On the way to the airport, I returned the pen to the restaurant. I later called and found out that it had never been claimed. Was the duplicate pen somehow manufactured out of thin air? Or was this just some bizarre, unexplained coincidence? I surely do not know. Barry Smith from Parts Unknown. Well, Barry, whether synchronous, coincidence, or just plain paranormal, who can say? I do know that it is an incredible and truly amazing story. Thank you for sharing it with us. Our last story can definitely be placed in the paranormal box of stories, but it also contains a bit of synchronicity. It was sent in by Nancy Hornsby, who writes to us right here in my very own backyard. Hello, Ron. First, let me say I found you while listening to one of my favorite streaming stations based right here in Portland, Oregon, KPLN Radio. I have a strange story for you that I hope you will play on your show. My boyfriend and I like to visit graveyards. No, we are not ghost hunters. We like the history of it all. In fact, this last summer, we visited the oldest maintained graveyard in the United States, the Miles Standish Burial Ground in Duxbury, Massachusetts. We went to a graveyard here in Portland a few years back. We often bring lunch with us to spend the day looking at the various headstones with the goal of finding the oldest in the yard. We also look for famous people and take rubbings of the most ornate graves. We were sitting on a bench eating lunch when a small boy came up to us. He introduced himself as Laney. I would guess he was about 7 or 8 years old. He had a charming personality and told some pretty amazing stories. Ron, I think you would have liked him. After a while, he said he had to go now. We watched as he walked off, but he didn't head for any gates. He went deeper into the graveyard. I just thought he was heading to meet with his mom and dad. After lunch, we started off in the same direction as Lainey did. What we found still sends chills through my body today. We found the grave of 7-year-old Lainey Michael Phillips. Just a coincidence, you say? Hardly. You see, the grave had a picture of young Lainey engraved right on it. It was the boy we chatted with. Nancy Hornsby, Portland, Oregon. Well, I would have to say that probably is not a coincidence, and I thank you for sharing your story. Nancy also included a picture of the headstone, and I will have that in the show notes. Do you have a story that you want to tell on the show? If you do, we want to hear it. It can be about any subject and from any genre. Heck, it doesn't even have to be true. Original fiction or stories from the public domain are quite welcome. To submit them, head to ronsamazingstories.com and click on the story submission banner. Fill out the form, and soon your story will be heard on the show. Do you have a story but don't want to write it? That's okay too. Just leave your contact information, a brief description of your story, and I'll get back to you. We can write it together. However, if you don't do it, your story remains just that, your story. Why not share it with the world and make it our story? Like I said at the top of the show today, we have classic science fiction for you. It is special in many ways because it was so far ahead of its time in the 50s that most folks probably didn't understand it. In fact, it may surprise you to know that most science fiction of the 30s, 40s, and early 50s was considered to be crackpot literature. Authors didn't even want to use their real names when creating it in fear of ridicule. This began to change in the 1950s with amazing science fiction movies like Forbidden Planet, War of the Worlds, and The Day the Earth Stood Still. However, radio lagged behind. Great shows like Dimension X didn't last long because they had trouble finding sponsors and were usually placed in off-hour time slots. People just didn't want science fiction on their radios. This had a side effect. It meant that these shows had to be better than anyone else's. Hence, I use the word classic science fiction, and it truly is. Our story today comes from the series Dimension X and explores the distant future of 1965, man's first attempt to see what's out there. The story is called The Outer Limit and is a thriller that has all the trimmings of today's news. With all the rockets that SpaceX is putting up these days, is first contact really off the table? Please enjoy The Outer Limit, which first aired September 8th, 1950.
Adventures in Time and Space, transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X.
Can you predict what will come in 100 years, or in 10, or in the next minute? Some people think they can. Nuclear science, mathematicians, astronomers, biologists. They'll predict the shape of the future because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown, Dimension X.
Dimension X.
We go ahead now in time to 1965. We're on a vast concrete runway set in the desert of the Southwest. A giant metal ship stands before us, prow pointed for the stars. And in 5 minutes, the signal will flash, and it will tear up through the atmosphere to the outer limits.
Attention. Attention. Clear field for takeoff. Clear field.
5 minutes, Steve.
For all right. Takeoff.
Warmer up, Charlie.
I want to go over procedure again, Steve.
Don't worry, I got it straight.
We'll just make sure.
Okay. I take her up on jets to 50,000, then I cut in the rocket.
No lower, or your tail blast will burn out three counties.
I climb 4 minutes on rockets, then start maneuver tests.
Remember that, no more than 4 minutes.
Right.
This ship isn't like those strata rockets you've been testing. She's the first one built for outer space. If she works, she can go clear to the moon.
If I'd have known that, I'd have brought my toothbrush.
Well, not this trip. Now get this, Steve. You've got power there to clear the Earth's gravitational field. But remember, after you cut in the rockets, you've only got 10 minutes fuel. If you go beyond the outer limit and don't save fuel for the return...
I know, I won't get down again.
That's right, Steve. You'll drift off into space. Get that now. 10 minutes fuel.
Gotcha.
As far as I'm concerned, this project is a lot more important than that cosmic ray bomb they're testing out in the Pacific tonight.
Well, the Security Commission brass doesn't think so. I don't see any undersecretaries under anything.
Don't worry. In the long run, our ship will make the CR bomb back page stuff. But in the meantime, it's just as dangerous. Remember, half the principles in this ship are pure theory, Steve. Slide rule stuff. If anything goes wrong, we may have to scrape you off the landscape with a soup spoon.
You have a charming sense of humor.
And here's what I'm getting at. We're risking your neck in this test. If anything blows, we don't want to have the next man pull the same boner.
I know, Hank.
So keep your mic open and keep talking. If anything goes wrong, we want to know exactly why. And we won't be able to ask you. Let us know before you pull every switch. Before you do anything. You got that?
Yeah.
Even if you only have to blow your nose.
All right, get those fuel lines away.
Okay, Mr. Grove.
Well, I guess that's about all, Steve.
That reminds me. Look, if Mary calls, I'm just up on a milk run. I didn't tell her today was it.
How is she?
She's okay, but she's due about now, and I don't want her to be nervous.
Hey, I didn't know the baby was that close.
Yeah?
Steve, I really ought to be sending a single man on this job.
What, cut me out of a soft paycheck? Forget it, Hank. You know, you can't get anybody else who can take 15 G's acceleration when those rockets cut in.
Yeah, I know. It's time, Steve.
Yeah. Well, see you later. Don't worry, Hank. I'll sweat for both of us. Button her up, Charlie. So long, Hank.
So long. We'll give you the light from control. Okay, Steve. Got you on the speaker. I'm ready to go.
Mr. Hanson.
Ready on radar, Sergeant?
Check.
Mr. Hanson, you better see this.
What is it, Elsa?
Message center for Steve. Mrs. Weston just left for the hospital.
What? Hello, Steve.
Yeah.
Stand by a minute.
Shall we hold the takeoff, Mr. Hanson?
What? Oh, yes. No, wait just a minute. It's too late now.
You going to tell him?
Maybe he's got enough to worry about.
Hey, what's holding us up, Hank? Something on your mind?
No, it's nothing, Steve. I just wanted to say good luck. Clear for takeoff, Charlie?
Right.
Okay, give them the light. All right, Steve, I'm reading you clear.
I'm at 40,000. Airspeed 600. She's running fine. Soundproofing works. There's a third degree waiver in the AGY pressure.
Got that, Charlie?
Check. Dead center on radar, Mr. Hanson.
50,000 now. Cutting out the port jet. Now the starboard. Off jet. Airspeed dropping. Opening the rocket, port. Switch sticks a little, Charlie. Knock the alcohol. Pressure at 350. All right, now I'm advancing the ignition key. Here goes rocket one.
Steve, you all right?
Yeah. Looks like somebody snuck into the sledgehammer. Airspeed now 1,200. Here goes number two.
Hello, Steve. Elapsed rocket time is now 4 minutes. What's your altitude? Over to you.
Speed 4,400. Still climbing. Altitude... 297 miles.
All right, you're at the outer limit. Level off for maneuver test. You've got exactly 6 minutes fuel left.
Okay. Starting a 3-degree left bank. It's a little sluggish. It's all right now. There's a low vibration someplace. Maybe the cockpit hatch. Now I'm straightening out.
5 minutes fuel left.
Now I'm starting a 3-degree... Hey!
What's the matter? What's wrong?
There's something up here. Something shining.
What are you talking about?
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
Steve, you're at the outer limit now.
I can see it plain now.
Steve, don't go any higher. You've only got 4 minutes left. You've only got...
Get it static. I can't hear you, Hank. It's dead ahead now. I'm going to make a pass at it. Get a good look. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, come in.
9 minutes fuel gone.
Still no sign on radar.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Steve, what's happened? Charlie, get out the crash squad. Tell the Army squadron to alert their search planes.
Right.
9.5 minutes crash gone. Squadron.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Squadron. What's happened? Who the devil is it?
Charlie,
hello.
For Mr. Hansen.
Come in, Steve.
We need a search squadron.
Come in.
No, Mr. Hansen's busy.
Hello. Hello, Steve. Hello, Steve.
10 minutes, Mr. Hansen. At the end of this fuel.
How long has it been now?
10 hours, Mr. Hansen.
Nothing more on radar, Sergeant?
Screen's blank.
Colonel Corelli called in. Search planes are back. He didn't find anything.
Should be some trace.
He couldn't have bailed out, could he?
You don't hit the silk at 4,400 miles an hour. He either went past the outer limit, ran out of fuel. Something blew, and we'll find the pieces scattered from here to the coast. Why does it have to be the best men? Always the best men.
I'll get it, sir.
Charlie, we've got to figure out what was wrong.
Yes. All right, I'll tell you.
Something must have blown.
Mr. Hansen,
yeah?
There's a message from Northside Hospital for Steve.
Well, what is it?
Mrs. Weston's fine. It's a boy.
Thank you, Elsie. It's a boy, Charlie.
Oh.
Fine. It's a boy. He didn't even know she went to the hospital. How am I going to tell Mary that?
Wasn't your fault, Mr. Hansen? Ship had to be tested.
Yeah, we'll build another one, and some other flying fool will shoot past the outer limit into space. Oh, I'm getting old, Charlie. You can remember when I used to take him up myself. Now I've got to send other men.
It's a job, Mr. Hansen.
Now I'm afraid. Every time I hear a jet go off, I jump. Every time I have to send someone up in a new model, I start to sweat.
Mr. Hansen?
Yeah?
I think there's something on the radar.
No flight scheduled in, are there, Elsie?
We have the whole day cleared.
It's coming in behind us. Here it comes over the building.
What crazy jockey is buzzing the field like that? Is that an Army plane, Charlie?
I can't see.
It's turning.
Charlie, alert the field.
I know that engine. Steve!
That's impossible.
Look, that's his ship.
It can't be.
Well, there's no other model like that. It's Steve, all right.
It's coming in. Thank God.
God. All right, sit down, Steve. The quicker we get this done, the quicker you get over to see Mary and the baby.
Hank.
Elsie, give the order to check and refuel the rockets. I don't want anybody in here till I get Steve's reports. Bury any calls. All right, let's have it. What the devil happened to you?
Hank, does that cosmic ray bomb still go off tonight?
What are you talking about? Straighten out, Steve. Where have you been for the last 10 hours?
Listen, Hank, there's something more important.
Come on. I've got to get a report on the screen to Washington, so let's have it. I've got to know how you stretched 10 minutes fuel to keep you in the air for 10 hours.
Now, one thing before I talk.
Look, Steve.
Have the Geiger men run over the ship before they refuel.
What'd you run into?
So help me, Hank, I don't know. But we better check and make sure it isn't radioactive.
Elsie, add a Geiger report on the standard check. Steve, maybe we better have the doc look you over, too.
No, I'll be all right. They said I'd be all right.
They? Look, son, I know you've had a tough time, but we've had this field on the alert for 10 hours. One of the Army boys cracked up looking for you, and he's hurt bad. So let's have the story. Let's have it straight.
I don't know how to tell you. Hank, I saw something up there.
At 300 miles?
I chased something up there, Hank, and I caught it.
Now, don't hand me that.
Listen,
Steve.
I was cruising along, just starting the right bank, when I spotted something. It must have been going about half my speed. It was egg-shaped and smooth. I made a pass at it, and I was coming back for another, and then there was a humming sound.
Humming?
A sort of vibration. And I blacked out. I was headed straight for it at 4,400 miles an hour. I thought it was going to be the biggest smash since Hiroshima, and I guess I was drinking that bottle.
Never mind that, Steve. What happened?
I came to inside their ship.
Uh-huh. Steve, this whole thing has been a devil of a strain on you. I'm going to call Major Donaldson from the Army base. Ask him to sit in.
The psychiatrist? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let him run his tests. He'll tell you I'm not kidding. Because, Hank, unless I miss my guess, I've just been tipped off to the way the world ends.
All right, Mr. Weston, suppose you continue your story.
Yes, let's have it, Steve. You woke up inside the ship?
Yes, and the place was jammed with machinery. Dials, blinkers. I couldn't recognize anything.
And you were surrounded by these men from Mars?
I didn't say anything about men from Mars. I didn't even say they were men. I couldn't see them clearly. They were just there.
Where did they come from, then?
Another galaxy. Millions of miles outside of our solar system. That's all I know. You figure out where they came from.
And they came all that distance to find the Earth?
Yes.
Did they tell you that?
Yes.
You mean they spoke English to you?
No, they didn't. It's funny. I hadn't thought. They didn't really speak to me at all. They just planted the thoughts in my mind.
You mean thought transference, telepathy?
Yes, that's right.
Well, Steve, what brought them here?
We did, Hank. We rang their bell. We brought them in.
Well, how?
With our atomic explosions. Hank, that's why you've got to stop that bomb test tonight.
I'll give up.
Look, you've got to believe me, Hank. Oh, how can I make you understand?
Maybe I can help, Mr. West. Would you submit to narcopsychometry?
What's that?
Under proper drugs, I can put you back in this ship. By suggestion. Then we can get a playback record of your memory pattern on the audio circuit.
How long will that take?
Half an hour. We'll have to go over to the lab.
Will you believe me if it checks?
It will give us an accurate memory picture of what your mind reports.
All right, let's go. Hank, you gotta believe me, we haven't got much time.
You should be getting drowsy now. Count backwards from 10.
10. 9. 8, 7, 6, 6.
He's under. Now we attach the head plate electrodes. The cortical pickup. Look out for that wire, Mr. Henson. Rio setting, 31.3. Now throw that switch, Mr. Henson. I have to start him off by suggestion. All right, Steve. You're in your ship now. You're in the rocket.
Rocket.
You're in the rocket. You're in the rocket. And you've just sighted something strange.
Now I'm starting at 3 degrees right.
What's that?
Hey, there's something up here. Something shining.
His memory pattern. We're picking it up electronically.
There's something above me, Hank. I'm going to chase it.
It's piped through the audio circuits.
I'm getting static. I can't hear you, Hank.
This is where we lost contact with him.
I'm going to make a pass at it. Hey, it's swerving to meet me. It's dead ahead now. It's dead ahead.
Now what?
This is where he blacked out. There's no telling how long, minutes or hours.
What's that noise?
I don't know. Quiet.
How did I get in here? What? Who are you?
Is he seeing things?
Intergalactic Patrol? What's that?
What are they saying, Steve? What are they saying?
It's about nuclear fission. They know about it. They know the danger of it. Long ago, they had wars that almost destroyed them. But
finally they learn. Now they've outlawed war.
Go on, Steve.
They patrol space. When their detector picks up an atomic explosion, they send a patrol.
What are they going to do?
They've quarantined us.
Quarantined?
They've isolated the Earth. Because we don't know how to control ourselves yet. Until we learn, we'll be a menace to the whole universe.
What is this nonsense?
Quiet. How are they going to do it, Steve?
They've spread a layer out here of... I don't know how to call it. All around the Earth. It's miles deep. When there's an atomic explosion on Earth, the radioactive particles will drift up to this layer and set off a chain reaction. It'll go around the world in microseconds. And that's the end.
The end? What's he...
Wait.
Yes. Yes. I understand. I've got to bring back the warning. You're going to put me back in my ship to bring the warning.
Now what?
Blacked out again. I guess that's all.
What does all that mean?
It's what he remembers.
You don't think that really happened?
No. Narcopsychometry circuits produce what he remembers. It just means that Steve believes this happened.
I don't like to see this. I've seen too many top pilots snap. Steve is the best I've known. How bad do you think he is?
Frankly, outside of the presence of this well-organized hallucination, there's no sign of unbalance. May not be too serious. If he had a more plausible story, I'd be inclined to believe him.
Warning. Hank.
It's all right, boy.
Did you hear it, Hank? You understand?
Sure. We've been quarantined.
Let me give you something to make you sleep, Steve.
Don't you understand? They fixed it so that if we set off one more nuclear explosion, that'll be it.
Of course. Don't roll your sleeve down.
You don't believe me.
Now, take it easy, Steve.
For the test tonight. They're setting off the CR bomb. Hank, what time is it?
11:20.
Well, it's scheduled for midnight. Hank, we got to stop that bomb.
Steve, let Donaldson give you the hypo.
Hank, you've got to believe me. I saw them. I got the warning. If we touch off that bomb tonight, it'll be the biggest galactic 4th of July of all time. The whole Earth will go up like a Roman candle. April 10th, 1965, the end.
Now, look, Steve, you better calm down. Don't you want to see Mary and the baby? You've got a new son, remember?
Yeah, that's just it. I want to see my son. I want him to live. If that bomb goes off, Hank, we've got to stop them.
Mr. Hansen, I think we'd better get over to the base hospital.
Hank, you've got to believe me.
Yeah, sure, Steve. Maybe there is something to it. Look, it's out of your hands. I'll put it in a report and shove it into Washington in the morning.
In the morning? There isn't going to be any morning, Hank. Don't you understand? You've got to call Washington now. Get the head of the Security Commission and postpone that test.
Now, you know I can't do that, Steve. My neck would be out a mile. Besides, this is 1965, not 45. 20 countries have atomic bombs now. What's the use of stopping just this one? The rest will keep right on popping them
off. Well, then we'll have to call an international conference. Can't you understand, Hank? The first one that goes off finishes us at the end. They've given us the quarantine warning.
Steve, I think you'd better go with us to the base hospital.
Look, Steve, we can call up for a detail if we have to.
All right. I'll go with you. You don't need a straitjacket.
That's the way, Steve. You'll probably feel better by morning. Let's go.
Well, Steve, tomorrow I'll drive you over to the hospital to see Mary and the kid.
Sure.
Look at the ship under the floodlights. Pretty, huh? You'll be flying her again soon, don't you worry.
Yeah, I guess so. What you doing out in the line? The refueler?
Yeah, we got Clausewitz coming in tomorrow from Denver for another test. Figure we give you a day off.
That's good. That's fine.
Steve, come back. Come on, Donaldson. Steve, wait. He's heading for the rocket. Look, there he goes up. That crazy fool. You can't get at him now. That covers armor glass.
He's waving.
Yeah, towards control. It's the radio. He needs the radio. Come on.
I should have gotten help.
Well, the radio's still hooked up here. Hello, Steve.
Listen to me, Hank. You gotta call Washington now.
Come out of that rocket, Steve.
I'll call my men.
Don't try anything, Hank. They've refueled the rocket for tomorrow.
Take it easy, Steve.
Listen, you know what'll happen when I fire the rocket tubes down here?
Steve, don't.
They'll burn out every building for 5 miles. All of us in one big blast.
Steve, what do you want?
You've got to stop that bomb. You got to call Washington right now.
They won't believe me.
You make that call or I cut in the rocket. Now, I mean it, Hank. Now, hook my screen to yours in parallel. I want to see exactly what you're doing.
All right. Just don't fire those rockets.
Get going, Hank.
got 12 minutes to make that call and stop that bomb.
All right, I'm making the parallel hookup right now. Donaldson, you think he'll really blast?
I don't know. Up to now, I'd almost say he was normal, but now he's liable to do anything, Hanson.
Steve, there. You're getting it on your screen?
Yeah. Now put that call through.
All right.
Operator.
Visit screen to Washington.
The visit screen circuits are busy, sir. If you'll try again in half an hour.
This is Security Commission priority. Break in, get me a line.
Yes, sir. Just a moment, please.
10 minutes, Hank.
Listen, Steve, I'm trying.
We're ready to take your call, sir.
Washington, Security Commission 3, this is urgent. I want Undersecretary Herbert Ames.
Washington 3, one moment, please.
Hurry, will you?
One moment, please.
What time is it, Donaldson?
11:51.
Do you think he'll fire those rockets?
He might.
Washington?
Visit screen 3, Mr. Herbert Ames, please.
That is a coded exchange. I cannot accept your call without clearance.
Get it through, Hank.
Listen, Washington, put it through. This is Mr. Hansen at San Marco Air Base. This is a priority call. I'm coded.
One moment, please. I will check your code number.
Get that through, Hank, and that bomb goes off at 12.
Will you be reasonable, Steve?
Your call has cleared, San Marco. Washington, visit screen 3. Herbert Ames, please.
Security Commission Ames.
Listen, Ames.
Oh, hello, Hank.
Ames, you've got to get me to the chief.
Are you kidding? He's at the test control room.
Yes, I know, but get him for me.
What's up? You look lousy. Or is it a bad circuit?
There's no time. I've got to get him before the test. It's about the CR bomb.
I can't take that responsibility.
Get that through, Hank, or I flag.
Hey, what's going on there?
Ames, my project has a high enough rating. This is a priority A call.
What? Well, okay, it's your neck. I'll try to get him for you. He's in the control room, so you'll have to switch off your screen and speaker and go on earphones. Too much going on in there. Security ruling.
You hear that, Steve? I've got to cut the incoming screen.
All right, but don't try anything. 8 minutes, Hank.
Hello? Hello? What?
You got him, Hank?
Yes. This is Hansen at San Marco. No, sir, priority A request to cancel the bomb test. No, I'm serious. This is deadly serious. We sent the X-2 JTR up today to the outer limit. We uncovered evidence. Yes, on the automatic instruments. What's that? No possible chain reaction. No, I can't tell you the whole story. There isn't time here. Yes, I'll bring the readings into Washington in the morning. You've got to postpone the test till you see them. Look, I've worked on contracts with the commission for 10 years. Yes, I have complete confidence in my information. You can record that. All right, I'll call you back immediately. Bye.
Hank?
He's agreed to cancel, Steve. The bomb won't go off. All right, boy. You can come down out of that ship.
He's opening up. Here he comes.
All right, Steve. Come on down.
Sure, Hank. Just a second.
Hank, I was scared. I was plain scared.
Easy now, it's all over. The bomb won't go off.
Thank God. Look, I want to see Mary and the baby. Can you get me transportation now?
Oh, wait a minute, it's almost 12. They won't let you in the hospital now.
I want to see the baby.
Sure you do, but you've been under a strain.
I've got a shot for you here, Steve. Give you a good night's sleep. All right, roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, here.
That'll make you sleep. Sergeant will find you a bed.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mr. Weston.
Okay. Good night, Hank. I'm kind of beat. It's been a tough night. It sure has. I thought for a minute he was going to blast those rockets and send us all to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
Quite a stunt getting the ray bomb test called off.
It isn't called off.
But... the chief said...
Ames couldn't get the chief. I was talking to a dead circuit. Bomb goes off in a couple of minutes.
Oh. Poor Steve. He was one of the best.
He was the best. 1 in 10 million.
Some story of his, poor guy. For a while, he almost had me believing that quarantine. That's a very common delusion. End of the world.
Yeah. I suppose so. Ah, it's a nice night. Never saw the stars so bright.
We better be getting in. That wind is cold.
Well, the bomb goes off in 30 seconds. Poor Steve.
You know, Hanson, there's just one thing.
Yeah?
It's outside my field, but I'm curious.
How did he keep that ship in the air for 10 hours with only 10 minutes fuel?
Now that was not the best recording of that episode. There is a pristine copy that ran much later in the show's first season. Why did I pick that one? I believe the acting was far superior in this early edition. Perhaps they were more vested in making the story work. Either way, it truly is classic old-time radio for me. And I hope you enjoyed it.
Not so important times in history.
In this segment, we take a look at historical events that may otherwise go unnoticed. We look at history with a fish-eyed lens, giving a perspective that should provide no insight to anyone or any time. But it is historical or hysterical, as the case may be. Join us now for this event in history. This time we head back to World War II to hear the story of Unsinkable Sam. This was the nickname given to a common house cat who was actually named Oscar. He started as a ship's cat aboard the Nazi ship, the Bismarck, which was sank by the British ship HMS Cossack in 1941. The British crew found the cat floating on a board hours after the ship sank, took him aboard, and named him Oscar. Later in the war, the Cossack was sank after being hit by a torpedo, killing 159 crew members. Oscar survived again and was rescued along with the remaining crew. He was given the nickname Unsinkable Sam. His last service was aboard the HMS Ark Royal, an aircraft carrier that was also torpedoed, this time by a Nazi U-boat. Oscar survived that attack as well. The loss of the Ark Royal proved to be the end of Sam's shipborne career. He was transferred to the officers of the Governor of Gibraltar and then sent back to the United Kingdom. Oscar sat out the remainder of the war, living in Belfast at the Home for Sailors, catching mice and eating fish. Oscar died in 1955, a full 14 years after the sinking of the Bismarck. How about that? I will have a picture of Oscar in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Not So Important Times in History. It was brought to you by Gladys Goodies, great treats for your dog to eat. That was episode number 443, and these are the people that made it happen. James Dupree, Barry Smith, Nancy Hornsby, Jason Dowd, and our very own Gladys Goodies. Thank you, guys. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.